This is the Jump Around with Jim Rutledge, outfitted by Iron Jock, streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel.
It is the Jump Around 3.0. I am Jim Rutledge, live from the Everlight Solar Studio. This is the Jump Around. We are presented by Iron Jock. Use the promo code ESPN30 for 30% off all purchases over $50 at ironjock.com. That's Iron Jock with a C. Fantastic stuff over at Iron Jock. And you know what? The Badgers, I almost say through three quarters, was pretty dang close to fantastic. Not all the way through three quarters. That first half primetime was fantastic against Penn State. But a story that we all knew too well, the Badgers run out of gas against a top 10 team. And I came away from that game, and I know people are getting in their feels still about Luke Fickell, and Jim Leonard's not walked through that door. So let's just stop with that. And Jim Leonard, if he did walk through that door, doesn't put the program in a better position. And I like Jim Leonard. Paul Chryst needed to be fired. Not because he was a bad football coach, but because we are already short on talent, and that was a problem starting with Paul Chryst. It was going to get really bad if Paul Chryst had stayed because we didn't have an NIL plan. I still don't know if our NIL plan is matched with some of the premier programs in the country. But right now, we're not worried about premier. We're trying to get to that upper echelon of the Big Ten. So we could do, the next time we have a soft schedule, do what Indiana's doing. We should have done last year what Indiana's doing this year. Beat up on a bunch of lesser opponents. Instead, we have a gauntlet of a schedule. And the Badgers have faltered every time they've played a team that is more talented than them. And do you want a coaching staff that can out-scheme someone and win a game? Absolutely. But they have a staff that's been able to put themselves in position to win these games, and then the players run out of gas, or they make really stupid throws. So the Braden Locke interception, I was at the touchdown club, and the end zone they were going to is the end zone opposite of the student section, and Penn State took it into the end zone that I was in. Braden Locke was trying to get the team down the other side of the field. And when he let that ball go, you couldn't even really see the Cardinal behind all the white that was Penn State. It was an easy interception for Reed. He walked into the house, back-breaking pick six. And unfortunately, that was the ball game because offensively, they couldn't do a lot. And part of it was there seemed to be no blocking. For the run game. Tui Walker, every time he got the ball, seemed like someone was on his hip getting ready to bring him down. There didn't seem to be any consistent way to get the ball to receivers. And I think a lot of that blame lands on Braden Locke. Like I know that Phil Longo can take his lumps and his hits, and he absolutely should. But we also need to just understand that Braden Locke hasn't really been good enough the last two games. Now, they beat Northwestern, but he wasn't good enough against Northwestern normally. He lost his momentum. He had momentum against Rutgers. It went away against Northwestern, and now it's completely gone, almost to negative momentum, after this game against Penn State. We got Iowa coming up, but man, I hate the way that he's playing going into Iowa off of two clunker performances where he's the number one reason they lost to Penn State. Now, it's unfair, absolutely, but you're the quarterback. You can't throw a pick six. I mean, let's just walk through the ways that that was a stupid throw. Down in distance. Let me count the ways.
He's
I
in
love
a bad
you,
spot. He's in a bad spot.
Pull it down and just take a sack. Get out of the end zone and take a sack.
I will say 3rd and 16 on the goal line. That's the last place you want to throw an interception or make any mistake.
Right. The wrong goal line. I don't care if you're in the red zone. You don't want to do that either. But you're on the opposite side of it. If that ball, the only way that ball is even remotely close to acceptable to let go is if you're trailing, and you better be at least on one of the 40s.
Might be the last drive, yes, if you do something like that.
Because if you're on the 40, if you're on your own 40 or the opposing team's 40, you're probably a little bit outside of field goal range.
Yep.
Or way outside of field goal range, and you have to make a play if you're trailing that position. But otherwise, if you're inside the opponent's 40, you're now positioned to kick a field goal. Don't turn the ball over. And if you're closer, you're setting the other team up. And, clearly. I mean, honestly, it was so bad on so many levels. And this kid is now, what, 13, 14 starts?
13, 14, not for Braden Locke. No, I believe he's only made 8 actual starts.
Okay,
but
maybe
the Bama game, like he played the full game.
Maybe
right?
That's so, what it's 13, 14 games. So starts about, regardless. Yeah. He's been in enough games, and he's been at home. You got a crowd behind you. Like, you can't make that throw. I believe Reed from Penn State said I couldn't believe he let it go. There was nobody in Cardinal to throw it to.
I don't think anyone, the other 77,000 people in the stadium, could believe he let that ball go when he did.
Just dirt the ball. I mean, of all the dumb decisions to be made, that was the dumbest one.
And it's tough because, obviously, we knew he's interception prone, and we knew he was going to have an interception in this game. Whether we liked it or not, he was going to make at least one mistake. You just hope that it was minimal. And the thing was...
That was catastrophic.
Exactly. And in the Northwestern games and the Rutgers game, the interceptions he threw there... They weren't terrible because they're on the other side of the 50, like you said. I mean, that bomb against Rutgers, like, it really, that was just a punt, even if it was on first down. This is the worst possible mistake in the worst possible moment of the game, which, look, I agree with you. It was the one reason, the one major reason they won. There's a lot of other reasons they lost in this game, though, too. I mean, the offensive line had to win against Penn State's defensive line, and that didn't happen at all throughout the game. Longest run of the game was Atticus Bertram's 15-yard run on the fake punt, on the impromptu fake punt. It wasn't even schemed up. It was a lot of luck on that one. That was the lucky break they needed. They just had the unlucky
break. At the start of the fourth quarter, the Badgers were trailing 14-13. The defense was doing its job.
No, the defense did its job. I'm saying the rest of the offense around Braden Locke was not either.
But if Locke does his job, because he missed some folks. Like, I understand. But he missed some folks.
And I will say, the slot receivers, Will Pauling, Tretch Kekahuna, the drops recently, they've been piling up.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, there's drops. But you're the quarterback. You're going to get all the love and glory. 22 of 42. 217 yards and a pick six, and it's not going to get it done.
No.
And there was at least a handful of throws that were just airmailed.
For sure.
And I don't want to nitpick every single drop, but we talk about this even with Jordan Love and NFL accuracy or true accuracy as a quarterback. It means giving the ball to receivers in a position where it's easier for them to catch it. I don't want to nitpick the drops, but I'm saying that not all drops are created equal.
No.
Some of these drops, you got one guy running across the field left to right, and then you throw it on his back shoulder trying to get back, and maybe it hits his hands, but that's hard to pull in still. You should pull in as a receiver, but even if he does catch it, where's he going? Like, the momentum's dead. So it was an abysmal performance from the offense as a whole, but that offense is led by Braden Locke. And there was enough times where he missed receivers where if he doesn't throw that pick six, we like our chances a lot, right?
It's probably 50-50 at that point. There's a 50-50 chance they win,
Which it probably comes down to a kick,
Yeah, you'll take that every single time, for sure.
That pick six, for a guy who's played that many games, is one of those mistakes that needs to live with him and his legacy until he changes it.
Yeah, for sure.
That was a lot to put on Braden Locke, but you know what? It was deserved. What is not deserved... as we transition here, and we're going to bring in Chrissy Birdsall, who made some, was it viral? I don't know. It was on Twitter, and you can find her on Twitter at Chrissy Birdsall. She put up a post before the game, kind of a visual representation of what is happening and why the Badger student section doesn't fill up before games. And, you know, it's been talked about a lot, and I believe we're going to get that up on our stream. And I want to get to Chrissy in a second, and this is the Jump Around 3.0, brought to you by Simden Chevy in Mount Horeb. You're only minutes away from a better buying experience at Simden Chevy in Mount Horeb. Lots of fans, including Molly Brown on Jim, Matt, and Molly, like to jump on the fact that the student section isn't there. And they could show up early. But you are asking a bunch of college students who are wanting to enjoy the rest of their time to do, and here's the thing, we're not asking them to do normal things. We're asking them to do the extraordinary. Because when I go to a Badger game, I don't show up to a Badger game an hour early. I might show up 25 minutes early to make sure that I'm getting to my seat as that game is starting. And if I miss a play or two, whatever, because everything around me is good. But if you're asking the student section to show up an hour plus early to get through, that is not feasible. So, Chrissy, thank you for hopping on. I want to talk about this. So, first, describe why you took the picture, why you posted it, and what you're trying to explain through Twitter with this photo.
Yeah, I got to the student section probably about 5-10 minutes before the game. It's pretty typical for our students. It was my first night game. I didn't go to Western Michigan. I was actually calling it for our student radio. So I show up, I'm walking down, and I just see this crowd. And I was shocked at how busy it was, knowing that the game was about to kick off in 5 minutes. And I'm thinking, all right, what is going on? And it was so crowded. I felt like I was trying to get into a concert, like a Taylor Swift concert. That's how busy it was to get in there. So I pulled out my phone, I took the video, and I was just like, you know what? This is why the student section is late. I've never seen it in the 4 years that I've been here. I'm in my senior year here. I've never seen the student section that bad trying to get into the gate.
And explain the process of getting into a game for the student section.
Yeah, so there's 10 gates to get into Camp Randall. Only one of them is open for students, gate 5. So you have to go through a metal detector. They do all of the security checks. Once you get in through those security checkpoints, you have to scan your ticket, and then you have to go to a section, which is, I think, J through P, and they give you a physical ticket, and it's just random. So you can choose whatever section you want to go. If you want to sit with your friends, you try and gather them before you go and get your physical ticket. You get that physical ticket, you go up, and then you go into your section. Once you get into your section, they file you in one single file lines to get to your seat. It is one of the more interesting processes in the Big Ten and probably just in college football in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's really asking the student section to be extra and go above and beyond what everyone else is having to do. So for an example, I was at our college game day tailgate, and it was so crowded at the tailgate, I said, you know what, let's just go early. We're going to be in a touchdown club so we can go get our drinks there easy. And that's what we did. And me and Tony Baker, we went and we made our way through. We entered by the university bookstore. It took 10 seconds. And the 10 seconds was probably just because I had to load up the tickets on my phone. And we scanned and walked right in. And we got to our seats. So I would say from the, and this was probably 35 minutes before the game that we had got there. It took less than 5 minutes, and this is including Tony stopping to go to the bathroom, for us to get through the gates to our seats in Touchdown Club. Prime, you also not a student. You went to the game, correct?
I went to the game as well. I made the mistake of getting tickets right next to the student section, though. So I felt some of the overflow of this. Now, the problem that me and my family made, we were right next to the student section, right on the northwest corner of the stadium. We entered...
Were you in the family section for...
It wasn't a family section. There was a lot of season ticket holders around us.
Okay.
So it was just a mix, really. But we were directly across the aisle from the student section.
Okay.
And we entered on the south end of the stadium. Terrible mistake. Because at that point, the stadium, Camp Randall, which now sells alcohol and a lot of other things at the concessions, very crowded in the concourses. And trying to walk from the concourse from the south end all the way to the north side, as much as the student section looked horrible outside, it felt very similar inside too. So, and then once we got to our section near the student section, then the students overflowing trying to get up to the stairwell with, I think, one usher trying to direct a sea of, you know, somewhat inebriated, mostly inebriated college kids and just general fans, didn't end up very well. So yeah, it's the whole process, and it really affects everything around it too for the student section.
And Chrissy, on that point, it is there's a whole problem, I would say, as a whole for the fan experience at Camp Randall, whether it is the alcohol side of things, whether it is that jams up trying to get a hot dog then, or peanuts or water or whatever. And then you have, obviously, not the best way to get... The bathrooms are in the same section. So like now, if where Ryan was sitting, it is a good 25-minute excursion to use the restroom or to try to get peanuts or a beer or whatever. It's a minimum 25 minutes. So that's a whole other part of the problem. But do you have, and I'm asking you as a college student to do what everyone asks college students to do, is solve the world's ills. And so what would you suggest to fix this problem for Camp Randall? Because all the olds, like Ryan over there, are complaining about the student section. Now, Molly Brown was complaining about the student section
not
showing up. It seems like we're asking them. Ryan, I think it's fair. We're asking the students way more than we're asking of ourselves.
Oh, for sure. When it comes to actually finding their seats and getting into the stadium, no. We're asking them to behave like 5-year-olds when they should be treated like adults.
Right. Or we're asking them to behave like they're 60-year-olds and they're going to show up super early and just get settled into their seat before the game so you can watch the team warm up.
Which would you prefer, Chrissy? 5 or 60-year-old?
Probably 60.
60?
Yeah. Don't want to be referred to children. referred to as children.
Fair.
But we are treating them like children. We're asking them to be better, but we are treating them like children. So, Chris, do you have any solutions? I don't know whether it's through your stuff at UW, through the media there. Has there been discussions about it? Have there been ballpark solutions?
Oh, we've talked about this like all the time, especially at student media, because we see it, you know, as they're filling up through the game, and you see the tweets that come out, and they're like, oh, the student section's only 45% full at the start of kickoff. And you know it's a little bit of both. I think that athletics could do different things to incentivize students to come earlier, maybe, you know, giving out certain promotions. I know Area Red does a pretty good job with that, which is Wisconsin student section, but maybe give out like a Ben's Pretzel or a Varsity L if you're over 21 for those types of students. I think that could get people to come earlier. And half the time, sometimes you're tailgating, you're having a good time, you don't even realize that, oh shoot, it's 6:20 and the game starts at 6:30. That's kind of what happened to us on Saturday when we were going to Camp Randall. I always thought the fireworks at the Packers were really cool, that they do it an hour before the game. And I feel like Wisconsin could implement something like that and, you know, just one loud boom and say, oh, okay, that game kicks off in an hour or a half hour. I think that would be a good solution. And it kind of is a Wisconsin tradition with the Packers.
I enjoy that. There could be some sort of... heck, you could play, not actually have the people jump around in the actual stadium, but you could play the jump around as some sort of bat signal out. If you can hear everything from Camp Randall for blocks, and so you could just fire that off. But I also think the other part of it, Chrissy, would be making it, I don't know, opening up the gates at a certain point to let the student section enter in and multiple, at least on that side of the stadium. So like, hey, with 10 minutes to go, let's just open it up. These kids need to get in. We want to have them showing up. They're going to cheer a lot more than the olds. Chrissy, thank you so much for joining. We're now going to be joined by Brian Bulaga in a minute to talk about the Wisconsin versus Iowa game. And for the Heartland Trophy, it will be a lot of fun. My former co-host on here, Brad Nortman, was definitely someone that had a piece in this rivalry. The last 10 times Wisconsin has played Iowa at Kinnick, Wisconsin 6-4. See, I told you. Now, I know that Iowa's won the last three or four there, but it's not impossible to win there, Ryan.
We never said it was impossible. We just said it's a hard place to play.
It is a hard place to play, but honestly, the mystique of these things get bigger over time. But three out of the last four is tough. We can talk to Brian Bulaga about that in a second. This is the Jump Around brought to you by Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. Winners go to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. Go to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison and be a winner. Brian Bulaga is coming up next.
To do. At Game Day Men's Health, we specialize in testosterone replacement therapy, weight loss, erectile dysfunction, and wellness. Proven to increase energy, build muscle, improve mood, and boost sex drive. Get started now and book your free consultation and testing. You'll get test results back in minutes, and we'll create a plan to optimize your health. Game Day Men's Health. Book your free consultation today.
This is the Jump Around 3.0. We got a video here from Ryan.
Well, yes, I wanted to play one video for us to start before our Brian Bulaga, our Iowa expert, joins the show. We have to play the most Iowa-Wisconsin video I could find.
Each autumn, a ritualistic struggle unfolds between the Hakai people and the Bajer people. The Hakai, a thick, burly clan nestled in the prairie.
Brian Bulaga, Iowa.
Await the Bajer, also thick and burly.
Is that the insinuation there, Ryan, that Brian Bulaga is thick and burly? Well, a Hakai, if you will?
All Hakai and all Bajer are thick and burly, of course.
All right. And before we get to Brian, though, Ryan, you said that you had an embarrassing moment. Is this what happened here?
Well, I don't know if it was too embarrassing because Brian very politely did not acknowledge it, I don't think, when we were texting before he came on the show. I didn't mention that it was great to have our first non-Badger fan on the show because we wanted to have somebody from the other side of, as I called it, the battle for freedom. As we all know, the freedom trophy that the Badgers and the Hakai fight for. Right, Brian?
Is that the trophy that they do before the game on like Friday night that the ball guys and the equipment guys do?
There's like a lunch pail trophy.
I believe that's the lunch pail trophy or the bucket of broken nails, one of those. The freedom trophy.
So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the Freedom Trophy is. What is that?
Sorry. The Freedom Trophy, I got it confused because that's the one that the Big Ten made up when they said that Wisconsin and Nebraska would be rivals when they joined the Big Ten, not the true rival of Iowa.
That's why when I saw that, I you might have texted it yesterday, but I looked at it this morning. I'm not good at responding to texts. I'm really bad at it. Actually, if you looked at my phone right now, it would show like 80 text messages because I'm just like, I can't go through them. I can't go through them now. Right. Like, I'm not going through everything, so I'm just moving on. But I looked at it because I was looking at your text to confirm what time I needed to get on. And I was like, what is the Freedom Trophy? I don't know what a Freedom Trophy is. I go, the last time I checked, that's not the name of this trophy. Maybe my rival, my trophy game rivalry lingo is off now. Maybe they renamed it. I don't think so. But I'm glad to know that I know what that is now.
Yeah, just poor producing.
Wisconsin, wow. Nebraska.
Now, to defend Ryan, on yesterday's show with Jim, Matt, and Molly, we did a little game and we asked who was Alex G, who was in, to name the 17 trophies, the trophy games in the Big Ten. And so I think that's probably why it was on Ryan's mind. I didn't realize, Brian, that there were 17 trophy games in the Big Ten. There's too many
trophies. That's a lot. That's way too many trophy games. Are you kidding me? Like, come on. There's not that many rivalries and big games, so to speak. Like, you kind of look at, you know, you look at the obvious ones, at least to me, like, yeah, we get it, Michigan, Ohio State, and like I always looked at it, Iowa, Wisconsin. Like, we have one with Purdue. We have one with Minnesota. Like, it's like, what are we doing with all these trophy games? There's too many trophy games. Like, and then we got one with Iowa State. It's just like way too many trophy games. Way too many. They're not all that important.
Yeah, less is more. So would you say your time at Iowa, who was the team where you're like, we got to beat them?
Yeah, to me it was always Wisconsin, right? I mean, my time, I got recruited hard by Wisconsin and Brett Bielema, and I have an interesting story with him. I mean, I loved Wisconsin. I visited there multiple times. When I was a junior, I met Joe Thomas there. Like, so it was a really cool experience for me. But what happened was Coach Bielema told me that he wanted me to play defensive line. And I was like, I'm not a defensive lineman. Yeah, I played in high school and that's great, but like, I'm not a defensive lineman. And obviously I was planning from the start was to play me a tackle. And I knew that's kind of where my future was going to take me. But what always made me care a little bit more about that game was probably 2 days before signing day, Brett Bielema called my cell phone, said, hey, I'm showing up to the house. We got to talk. So he was already like, he showed up to my house at, I mean, I think it was like 10 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock, saying, you can play offensive line. We want you to come here. And then Iowa found out that he was there. And like, it was like a, it just turned into something that should have never, like, it was nothing, right? Like, of course, like, I mean, he was in the area. We were going to hear him out. It was 2 days before signing day. I was committed. But, like, you know, especially now in the NIL days that we're in now, that was nothing. That was
like peanuts.
You
would have had a bag. You would have had a big bag of cash nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, like, that was peanuts. You know, the meeting with a coach before signing day. Like, what is that? Like, oh, like, big deal. But at the time, when, you know, back in 2006, that was a big deal. So I always took it, that game, a little more serious because of my recruiting kind of like situation with them. And I appreciate the game a lot because when you looked at the two teams, they mirrored each other, especially then. Wisconsin's a little bit different right now and how they're built and how they play. But when I was there, the two programs mirrored each other. It was the same style offense. It was the same style defense to a degree, but still same principles. And it was like you were playing your own team when you went out there. Like, it was, you're looking at your defense in the mirror, and it was always a really fun atmosphere. So to me, it was always Wisconsin.
Did Brett show you his Iowa tattoo in this recruiting process?
I think, well, because Iowa told me, ask him about his Iowa tattoo. Because they, listen, these guys all know who's recruiting who and who's going, like, you know, everyone already knows that. And they asked me to, hey, show me your Tiger Hawk tattoo. And, he didn't show it to me. He goes, I have one, but I'm not going to show it. You know, so it was, but like, listen, like he was a good dude. Like yeah. I thought he was a nice guy. I just, when he said you're going to play defensive line, and then 2 days before signing day said, oh, you can play O-line. I looked at that as a little, I don't know, man. Like, it doesn't sound like I'm going to get a chance to play offensive line is the way I looked at it.
Well, and it's funny. I believe Melvin Gordon had committed to Iowa and then went to Wisconsin. And part of his trepidation at Wisconsin was initially maybe they wanted him at corner. Then they kind of did the same thing and said, hey, you could be a running back. And he says now looking back at it, he wished he played corner because that's where the money is in the NFL. But it is one of those things where the position can matter in recruiting.
Oh, for sure. And like, listen, I kind of knew where I was as a player and where I was going to develop. Like, I knew I wasn't some, you know, 4.7, 4.6 speed, like 3-tech or 4-tech like J.J. Watt turned out to be. Like, that wasn't my build. That wasn't my skill set. My skill set was going to be as an offensive lineman. Like, that's what I was going to be. And I knew that. And I accepted that, even though it took me a little convincing from Iowa when I committed there. They're like, you're going to play offensive tackle. I'm like, well, what about tight end? You're going to play offensive tackle. I'm like, okay, got it. Like, you know, I understood. So, like, I kind of accepted that. And then my senior year, I just said, hey, I'll play left. We were short of left tackle. And I said, I'll play left tackle. I'll do it. Since that's clearly I'm going to go play offensive line in college, so I might as well do it here. And I could see that's where I was going to be moving forward was – on the offensive line and not on the defensive line.
And obviously you had the right vision on that. We're talking to Brian Bulaga, former Packer, former Hawkeye. Now I want to say Hawkeye because of the video, but former Hawkeye. What is your perspective as a Hawkeye on the Badger football program and their struggles? Because I think, unfortunately, it started, and I think Paul Chryst is a great ball coach, but I think the recruiting and the NIL and all that was so far behind that they had to make a change. And he's not the first, he won't be the last coach that with the NIL changes, they're left behind because they're great football coaches, but they can't put in the work to be basically CEOs like a Fickle has to be right now. Kirk Ferentz has been able to handle it so far, but it is a completely different recruiting landscape. But Wisconsin has changed not only how they're recruiting, but more on offense than defense. If you looked at it, what Tressel's running on defense is pretty similar to what Jim Leonard did as far as personnel groups. But offensively, it's a shock to the system. And I would imagine even as an Iowa fan to see Wisconsin running the spread.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the first game, I mean, you know, last year I didn't pay too much attention to it. I knew they were struggling, and it was his first year, and we all knew he was transitioning to this offense. So, like, I didn't pay much attention to it because I knew there was going to be struggles. Like, you can't completely swap personnel, even with this new landscape, that quickly to get the guys in that you need to run that system, right? So, like, I knew there was going to be some give and take. And then, obviously, I watched the first game I truly watched and watched intently was that USC game. I watched that whole game. It was a great game, right? Like, I Wisconsin played really well. I thought, you know, at the end, I wish they would have won that football game because I thought they deserved it. And, you know, some things happened towards the end that they lost it. But I walked away from that game really impressed with them offensively because at that time, that was the backup quarterback, right? So he was the backup QB because I knew that the starter had been injured and was out for the season against who'd he get hurt against?
Alabama,
Ohio State?
Alabama, the third play or something like that. Yeah, very early.
Yeah, so I knew it was the backup. So watching it, I was very impressed by what he was able to do, how he led the offense. But it is a shock to not see Wisconsin as a run-first team, right? And I get it. Like, people – because they tell it to me, too, as an Iowa guy. Like, you're so archaic and you're this. And then I go, yeah, I may be archaic. But, like, those are the principles that Iowa football has been forever. And, like, Kirk sticks by it. Yeah, they're throwing the ball way more than they have in the past. And in some games they're scoring more points than they ever have, which I get it. That everyone wants to see that. But, like, at the end of the day, they are a running football team, and they got a really good running back, and that's what they do. So, like, to watch Wisconsin spread it out and just fling it around, I mean, it's not like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this, but it just – it doesn't look right at times, right? And I get it. they're going to get there. Like, he's going to get that thing to where he wants it. He's going to get the right personnel. But in its early stages right now, like, I just look at him like, I don't get how Wisconsin's doing that. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. But at the same time, like, I see good signs out of the offense, right? Like, the Penn State, I watched a little bit of that game. That was always going to be a struggle, right? Like, I mean, I know they started hot and they played good early on, but, like, it was going to be a struggle. I mean, it's the same way when, like, Iowa went up to Ohio State, right? Yeah. It was a 7-0 ball game at halftime, and then something else happened. So, right. Like, it's just the way that these things go. So, that's not what I'm – I didn't look at the end of that Penn State-Wisconsin game as, like, oh, shame on Wisconsin. Like, I think he's got it going in the right direction. It's going to take more than 2 years, and I know fans are impatient with it. And they want it now, and they know the NIL's there, so you should be able to do this. And, like, if you want to build this program properly, right, like, and it's not going into the portal. It is getting recruits that you identify and building them up through the program and allowing it. I mean, because Iowa's done that from the start. Yeah, they've gone in the portal to get a quarterback and things like that. I get that. But, like, the foundation pieces are recruits, and that's how they build a program. And that's kind of what I think Wisconsin needs time to do at this point.
And with the offensive line, obviously you got a good eye for that. And Joe Thomas said that, like, look, if his son grew up and wanted to play O-line, he went, and obviously he's biased because he's a Badger, but he said he wouldn't steer his team away from the Badgers, even if they're still running the spread, because you still should be teaching NFL technique. Because obviously Wisconsin, just like Iowa, turned out a lot of NFL offensive linemen. And I think that's still... I mean, Phil Longo at North Carolina ran the ball 51% of the time, threw it 50. So no matter what, a good offense is going to be balanced, which means you need an offensive line that can pass block and run block. What differences, or what type of recruits, or what is this offensive line going to look like when it gets to, like, exactly where it needs to be? Because some of these kids were recruited to be probably more power offensive linemen than maybe that's in the spread offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Joe's right. I mean, I don't think Joe's wrong on too many things. Like, you do have to be taught proper technique. And if you're a spread offense, yes, there's a lot of pass blocking involved. And we know one thing in the NFL, even though in the NFL the run game is making its return and showing its importance week in and week out through the NFL, like the last 5 years, it's really shown how big of a piece that is. But at the end of the day, like, I learned this from a young age in the NFL from Sitton and Cliff and these guys, like, you know, run block for show, pass block for dough. And that's the way it is. You protect the quarterback, you get paid. And that's the way the NFL works. Like, you can get by in the NFL as an average run blocker, putting a body on a body, but you can't get by in the NFL being a bad pass blocker. Because if you get your quarterback hit, that's the easiest ticket out the door. So, like, I look at Wisconsin and how they're probably going to end up – they're probably going to end up developing and bringing guys in that are a little lighter bodied, probably a little more athletic built, a little bit leaner than what we've traditionally seen from Wisconsin offensive lines. Like, I go back to, you know, Joe was obviously a different breed. Joe was completely obviously off the charts of what he was as a player and his build and what he was. But Joe got brought in as a not a big guy, right? Like, and I got brought into Iowa as a 260-pound guy. Like, I got built up from that, as did he. And I feel like Wisconsin's going to go back to that model and not go out and get the 320-pound kid in high school, because the 320-pound kid in high school can only move so much, right? You can't – it's hard to strip him down and build him back up while developing his speed and all that, where if you get a – like a guy like Joe Thomas was, or things like that, these tight end builds, so to speak, mm-hmm. and build them up, you can develop everything as time goes on. And that's something that Kirk Ferentz has been doing that forever, like Riley Reiff, Brandon Scherff, myself, Tristan Wirfs. Like, all these guys, or all of us, were lighter, and we got built into heavier bodies that can move and do all those things. And that's how Wisconsin did things for a long time, too. With certain guys, so to speak, like Gabe Karimi would be one of them, and Joe, obviously, certain builds. obviously, you know, there's some guys that are just thick body.
So I was going to ask you about this. You probably would have seen him play at Wisconsin, but in your youth. But Aaron Gibson, 6'6", 375 pounds. I think he had the biggest helmet size in NFL history. Like, that guy's probably not coming around Wisconsin anymore. But that was a big guy.
That's not going to happen. And that's okay. Because, like, there's a place for where that guy's going to fit in and where he can play. But, like, Wisconsin can't do that with what they're trying to do. Yeah, they're still going to run the football, but bringing in 370-pound freshmen is just not going to fit what they're trying to do offensively. And when you spread teams out and you want to throw it and you want to run out of the gun and things like that, which Wisconsin does a lot of, you have to have athletic linemen that can move in space and block in space and things like that. And I'm not. It's not a knock on huge guys coming out of high school. Like, hey, there's some guys that are just enormous. I get it, but it's not the way Wisconsin is looking to build their offense, so to speak. If that makes sense. Yeah. Like, to me, it's very clear. Like, I see exactly the prototype body guy they want. Build him up for a year or two. Let him go at 305 pounds, and there he goes, and there he plays. Like, and obviously, guard's a little different than center and tackle, but that's kind of the mold. And as that time goes on, they're getting stronger, they're getting faster, everything comes together, and by the time they're third, fourth-year guys, they look like, you know, what you want. Great pass blockers, do their job in the run game, and that's what you want when you're spreading it out and throwing it 35 to 40 times a game.
Talking with Brian Bulaga, former Iowa Hawkeye, former Packer, on the jump around. What is the vibe around the Iowa program? I mean, because there's been change at Wisconsin, it's a little bit of the sky's falling, even though all their losses have been to, like, top 15 teams at the time at least. But Iowa, look, they beat Wisconsin last year in one of the most boring football games of ever seen in my life. It probably got Torrey Taylor drafted by the Bears. But, I mean, he finally won that game for Iowa. But Iowa is a program that I think still is very much in the same tier, the same sort of level in the Big Ten as the Badgers, and they're both trying to level up. They're doing it differently. So what's the vibe around Iowa and the name and likeness and competing with that and the way they run their offense and Kirk Ferentz? Like, there's a lot of similarities from the Badgers a few years ago. Iowa stayed the course, but obviously Kirk Ferentz is a legendary coach, so it makes sense to kind of stay with your guy. But how's that transition going with the more modern college football?
Yeah, I mean, I was back there last year and kind of saw the way things are going now, and I can't even wrap my brain around it, like what these kids are getting and what the colleges have to provide and everything. And I mean, for probably 3 days straight, I sat down with Kirk at breakfast or whatever it was and just talked about all of it and how he's adapting to it and how he's adjusting to it. And it seems like he's doing a really good job there, or the best he can from what he's used to, right? Like, it's real, like you said it earlier, like some of these old school coaches are struggling with it. And I understand why they're struggling with it, because it's difficult for them to just not worry about coaching ball and, you know, recruiting, obviously, but not trying to, like, almost guarantee guys money and who gets this and that. Like, that's a different, like you said, it's like a CEO. It's a whole different ball game, and I feel like he's doing a good job of that as best as Iowa football in general can. Like, no one's sitting here saying, oh, poor Iowa and Wisconsin, they have no money. Like, that's not the case. Like, there's plenty of money in the program, but to compete with the likes of getting kids like Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State, that's a different level, right? So You have to still continue to go back to your roots of identifying kids and developing them, and that's kind of still where he's at, and that's why a lot of guys from Iowa end up being really good football players, because they start as freshmen and they get developed. I think from the fan base standpoint, there are times that people get frustrated, and because they see all these offenses scoring 40 points a week and they play a certain style and they want to see Iowa, you know, change a little bit to that. And listen, I understand that, and who Kirk brought in, you know, obviously Brian left, his son is the offensive coordinator, and he brought in an offensive coordinator that has ties with LaFleur. There's things that when I watch Iowa, I see some things that LaFleur does that Iowa does in the run game and the motion and the action and kind of, you know, the window dressing and things. In the pass game, like, there's, like, let's just be real, there's only so many concepts and so many things you can draw up like nothing at this point is like ground, you know, breaking. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he came up with this play or this concept. And like, that doesn't happen anymore. Everything's been done from that standpoint. Then it gets to execution and who you got throwing the football, catching the football, blocking. And I just think right now, like, Iowa has a big week last week, and then the week before that against Michigan State, it was terrible, right? Like, it was really bad. And then the week prior, I think they scored another 40 points the week prior to that or whatever it was. So, like, you see these ebbs and flows and inconsistencies, and fans get, you know, they're loving it, and then they're like, what the hell is this? And then they're loving it, and now we go play Wisconsin, and it's probably going to be a war of attrition again, and it's going to be like, why can't we score 30 points against Wisconsin? Penn State scored 28 or whoever scored. Like, and but that's like, you know, that's where the fan bases are at now. Like, they see someone else do it. Well, why can't we do it? Well, I mean, listen, like, some personnel isn't the same as others, right? Like, and that's just the way it is. And I think what Kirk has done, and he's done it since I was there, he's very good at getting what he needs out of, you know, certain teams, certain players, and gets the best out of them. So, like, there's not a chance. I mean, this is why I never hit the panic button as long as Kirk's there, that, like, he's maxing out what he has. And that's how I always felt about him when I was there, and that's how I feel about it now. Like, he is getting everything out of those guys that he can get. And, like, as a fan, yeah, you may want, you know, a certain type of player or a better player. But listen, man, like, we're not certain programs, right? Like, we're not going to be able to attract the five-star from Southern Cal that wants to come here. Like, that's not going to happen that way. Nor do we have the finances to do it, most likely. So we have to trust the model that's been going on since he got here. Yeah, there's some new rules that we can now dip into to get certain players and things like that, of course. But at the end of the day, you have to trust the process that he's been doing from day one and hope he continues to evolve as this thing goes on.
Brian, before I let you go, I want to get your score prediction in this question as well, so you can give us the score for Iowa-Wisconsin, who's going to win. But then we started this with a rivalry question. I'm going to ask you about a professional rivalry question, because I'm a Bears fan, and Packer fans act like this isn't a rivalry. I still maintain it's a rivalry, because anytime the Bears, whether they are embarrassed on national TV with a Hail Mary, or they win a game against the Packers, which it's been a long time, it obviously immediately stokes up the fires. Just like Wisconsin, Minnesota, for college football, they beat the Gophers forever. The one time they lose to the Gophers, I mean, Badger fans have never been madder. I mean, you might as well run sandpaper across their face. So, score prediction, and then is Chicago and Green Bay a rivalry?
Yeah. So, I'll start with the score, like you asked, and I think, like I said, I think it's going to be a war of attrition. I really do. Like, I look at both sides and I see where both sides are at, and I still, like, I was going to play defense, and I still think Wisconsin's defense is good. Like, yeah. I think you know what I mean? Like, I think Wisconsin has a good defense, and this is what I look at again between these two sides. Like, it's going to be the same type of situation that we saw last year, unfortunately. I think there's a little bit more scoring, and I mean, like, a little bit. I'm gonna go 13-10 Iowa, because they're at home, and that's where I'm going.
Hey, I've been joking, but it might be a real score. I've been going 10-9 Wisconsin, so, like, I'm right there with you.
It's not, so, like, that's just where I'm at with it.
Like, and the weather's supposed to be nasty too. Like, I think it's just gonna be gross. Like, it's gonna be old school slobber knocker football or whatever. That's what you call it. Slobber knocker football. Yeah.
All right. So about the rivalry.
Yeah.
I still do believe that the Bears-Packers is the biggest, you know, rivalry in football, so to speak, right? Like, yeah, there's now modern-day rivalries that have outpaced that. You know, you look at certain divisional teams, maybe some of those have outpaced each other. Like, I think you could probably say, like, you know, Pittsburgh and Baltimore's probably outpaced the Packers you know, in intensity, so to speak, because of the way that series has been played out over the last 5 years or so. But I think overall, it is still the biggest rivalry. And I can assure you, every time we played the Bears, you could feel you know, the angst between the players and the fans. Like, you feel that as a player. And it's not like you sit here as a Green Bay Packer or a Chicago, maybe the Bears a little bit more, you know, because maybe the rhetoric in their building is a little more heightened because of how the games have gone over the last, I don't know how many years.
Forever.
Like, we don't go into this. Yeah. We don't go into the game, at least when I was there, like, all right, it's Bears week. Like, we need to destroy these guys. Like, you know, we hate, like they're a division opponent. We they're big games in division, but at the same time, like, you knew when you got out there on the field, whether it was home or away, like, everything cranks up because the fans crank it, right? Like, the energy in the building, no matter the record of each team, no matter when in the season is, like, everything gets turned up a notch and the players feel it. And that just, like, the game just, you know, kind of shoots from there. Like, the players, like, and it's hard to explain because, like, you look at every game, you try to treat every game the same. Like, you go into it and your preparation, your effort, like, everything's the same. But when the energy in the stadium just, like, turns because of the fans' hatred towards another team, it just, whether you're feeling that in Chicago or you're at home and you could feel your fans feeling that towards the Bears, it just turns up the intensity a little bit. And, like, things are way more scrutinized by the fans. They're way more into it. And it just makes for a better atmosphere, in my opinion. And that still is definitely true for this rivalry. So, yeah, like, I still call it that. No matter what it's – how it's gone the last whatever games, it is still a rivalry. Because I think now the Bears are better. I think they're a better football team. So, like, we're going to see more competitive football games than we did – than we have in the last, let's just say, 4 years, right? Like, yeah. I really believe that. So, it'll be a fun, you know, after, what is it, 2 weeks they play? Yeah. It'll be a fun game to watch, I think.
Yeah, and when you were talking, it made me think of Aaron Rodgers saying, "I own you," at Soldier, because he knows he felt it. He felt it in that moment, and yes, that was the rivalry. So our mutual friend Jason Wilde has said that he hopes that the Bears at least get better, and Caleb's good because he would like – he didn't use this specific comp, but you said Steelers and Ravens, and I don't know how that split out, but that's a heck of a rivalry. Those are really intense games. Is that something, as you've participated in this rivalry, you're a Packer fan, is that something you'd want for these two teams to really be 50-50 going forward in every game, to be on the line? Or, I mean, realistically, it's got to be nice to be a Packer fan and be like, hey, you know what, we can just roll our, you know, not as the players, but fans, like, we roll our helmet out there and we're gonna get the win.
Yeah, you know, obviously I am a Packer fan, and I'm very loyal to the organization as someone who, you know, feels very appreciative for what they've done for me as a player and all that. But I want it to be competitive. Like, I really do. I mean, when I was a rookie, that was a hell of a Bears team. Like, they had really good players. And for those first few years of my career, when we played the Bears, it was go time.
Like,
it,
Coach Bears, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was Lovey and Briggs and Urlacher, yeah, and Julius Peppers and Peanut Tillman and Tommy Harris. Like, this was a legitimate football team. Like, they were good. Olin Krutz and Cutler and Forte, yeah, and like they were good. Like, yeah. And those games were fun to play in. Yeah, they were physical and they were tough, and they, you know, they had everything involved, but they were fun to play in because of how good both teams were. And that's what I wanted to get back to, because I would imagine watching those games, obviously I watched them back on film, but yeah, watching them from either the stands or from TV, people enjoyed the hell out of that because they were great games. And that, to me, is what it's all about.
Brian, thank you so much for the extra time to talk a little Bears-Packers, too. Thank you so much for joining the show.
No problem, guys. Take it easy.
That's Brian Bulaga, former Iowa Hawkeye, to talk about the Iowa-Wisconsin game. Ryan, before we close out, who do you have winning?
Who do I have winning in this game? Oh, man. I would have to take... I hate saying I'm going to favor with the Hawkeyes, but I'm going to have to take the Hawkeye. They'll win this battle of the war. The war will not end. Yeah. The Hawkeye-Bezier will fight forever. But yeah, I unfortunately, I just feel like this is – at Kinnick is going to make a difference in this game.
10-9 Badgers.
10-9?
10-9 Badgers win.
Are we thinking three field goals or a touchdown and a safety?
I don't know.
Same. Doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, three field goals. No touchdowns for Iowa. Badgers have not allowed a lot of touchdowns.
True. And they have good special teams now. For the first time in a while, Badgers have the advantage at punter.
Absolutely. And I actually like the Badgers kicker for a college kicker.
Vacos is pretty good.
Yeah, he's got the – he still misses, but he's got the leg.
College kicker at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. All right, this has been a jump around.
Each autumn, a ritualistic struggle unfolds between the Hakai people and the Bajere people. The Hakai, a thick, burly clan nestled in the prairie.
Brian Blagan, Iowa.
Await the Bajere, also thick and burly.